Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Sunday Podcast, brought to you guys by sportshoes.com. As always, day six. Day six is done.
Six.
Euros is nearly gone. Matt and I are recording Saturday night after, well, it's got to be the race of the champs. I'm not even going to ask you your opinion. Andreas Almgren dominates the 10K, and Matt and I have been chatting. We do not remember a 10K like that since the Bikili days. And we've been crying out for it. The commentators always ask for it. The media asks for it. We ask for it. And everyone's like, why doesn't someone just actually run at a decent pace and blow the field away when they've got the ability to? And he's done it.
It was fantastic. That was the best sort of 45 minutes of athletics I've watched in quite a while. You know, the 10K followed by the men's 15. High drama in both. Almgren, you're just mesmerized. You're just so impressed by what he's doing. When you do reflect back on it, though, to say that we haven't seen it before. I mean, look, the Olympics in 2 years ago was a sub 27 minute race. The Worlds the year prior to that, very similar. We've seen races much, much quicker than this. I think we haven't seen these hard front running tactics pay off. I don't know what it is about the Olympics. I don't know what it is about the Worlds. You know, Gressier's PB of 26:50, whatever he's run, 57 or something, was from the Olympics, and he finished eighth. And so I don't know what it is. Obviously, those years, there's more on the line, and so athletes are more prepared, and maybe they're not coming off of, you know, Gressier coming off the back of being a world champion. And obviously, you've got the depth, so you've got more men, where it was just four, basically, big players, and then it just... Almgren continues to grind it down. You had more men who would be involved in it and maybe help people later on. So we've seen races that quick, but I just don't think we've seen it pay off and be successful like it was. And that is the distance running that everyone falls in love with. Like everyone can get behind.
It's like a cross-country race.
Everyone gets behind that execution. Like when you just see someone just grinding, just lap after lap after lap, and then it working as well, you just can't help but be on his side. It was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Like you say, like when he's grinding, his form was just unbelievable as well and just looked so, so comfortable. Moving at that pace. And I actually thought like some of the tactics as well, like where, and I think they highlight this on comms as well, when Gressier started to, I guess, falter a little bit, Lobalu overtook him and Almgren recognized it and just went 1 second quicker to be like, right, now all I need to do is lift it a little bit. And then he could close in 65 for the last lap like he did. Because he got himself there. And I think, yeah, that's the point we're making, is that yes, we've seen quicker races, but the guy led 9K of a 10K, and how many times has that happened?
Itself never happened. Not that we've ever seen. Not only that, that's the largest winning margin that I think has ever happened at European Championships. We'd have to check the facts on a global championship, but one would probably say it must be, 19 seconds on Lobalu. It was just phenomenal. And it was... I think it was the seventh kilometer where he just goes 63, 62, 61. Like to do that at that point in the race, that was his gap and he destroyed them. And he still was then able to just settle back to sort of 65s. His last couple of Ks there, sort of 242, 243, settles back at 65s and holds it together. But he just broke them, you know, right when it was asked, he was asking the question, he just went again. And you're right. He got that feedback from Gressier looking like he was struggling and just pushed on. I mean, 13:30 from what did they say on comms? 13:30 from a kilometer
to 6K. And then he put with 178, so apparently they were saying.
Or like maybe half a 78. But then he puts in the 234K. Yeah. And that was the one which killed them all. It was just outrageous. And he might have been back up with 238. I don't even want to check the splits because I was so focused watching it. And, you know, you were just looking at the lap splits every lap, waiting to see what it's coming at. And man, it paid off. What it does show me as well is, look, those guys, obviously Gressier's doubling back, Lobalu's doubling back. There was a number of guys doubling, Ikimeli's doubling back. I know Kripa wasn't. But what it does show you as well is when you just take a chance at a championship, the chances are, you know, if that was a 28-minute race, does Almgren win? Maybe. I mean, he looked in supreme shape today. Maybe. But you do start to bring the other boys in. And I know it's obvious, but like, it was a 27:23 race. And I'm not being funny. Dave Malarkey and Scott Beattie have run 27:20 at Soundtanky. I know it's completely different circumstances, but they too have just lapped off 66s. You know, 60, like, and effectively, obviously you have that ridiculously slow first K and you have that 1330, you know, 5K and then gets quicker. What was it? Is it his 5K from 2K to 7K must have been more like 1315. So that is outrageous. But you know, it's for a large part of that race, it's 2650 pace, 2655 pace is just a clip inside 27. And actually those guys on their day, you know, the Gressiers and stuff, they're capable of it, but I'm going to ask them the question today here in Birmingham, and they didn't have the answer. I think that is common at the championships. Everyone just assumes everyone is at their peak, when actually sometimes they're not.
Yeah, I think the difference is as well, like people, when people go into a time trial, they really fancy it and they're really up for hurting themselves. Like if people are getting geared up to go to Sound 10K or to go to a Diamond League, they're thinking, yeah, I'm ready to like get in an absolute box from after the first mile, basically, and just hang on in there. Whereas I think going to a championship, people are probably thinking, oh, how's the race going to play out? Well, how can I execute these tactics? But ultimately, you're executing tactics better when you're not redlining. And Almgren basically threw the rule book out as soon as he's hit the front. And then everyone's thinking, right, well, I'm in survival mode route. Now I'm like, Gressier's not even thinking about what his tactics were previously. It's like, right, I need to survive.
That's so true. Yeah, they had to think on their feet fast. We saw Mike Foppen drop out. In fact, it was four DNFs. Yeah. And it wasn't from falling. I think people just realized their legs were run. At that point, Foppen gets himself to 6K. And we even saw that with Malarkey and Beattie. Credit to them, because I think they too were like, they gave it a go. And then a part of them must have thought, this is just a mile surge. You know, this is a mile. This is a 2K surge. Let's go with it. We've broke the others. You know, let's see the thing.
If it had been, we'd have been sat here now if they hadn't gone with that, and we'd have said, boys, why haven't you gone with it?
So
we can't blame them at all.
No, they did. I love that style of racing. You know, the boys got after it. They quickly realized, Jesus, it was 3K when there was, it was 3-4K, you know, still a long way to go when Malarkey and Beattie were isolated. I think they thought, right, we got to get back in this pack and work with these guys to get the most out of this race. And that is what 10,000 meter championship racing is about. You know, just seeing that unfold, you know, every K was different to the last. And, but back to Almgren quickly about the, it also shows me, we were talking about time trial scenarios, you know, on the face of it, you're like, Almgren is the perfect pace setter. He was just clipping off 241s, 242s, 240s, the odd 230. He was clipping off these kids. But I think when you're at that speed, it also shows you the damage just picking up a tiny bit can do. When he went from 64s to 63, that was enough to break, you know, they were on the limit already. And this is what you don't get in a time trial with the wave lights, especially.
Yeah.
You don't get that pace just notching up a tiny bit. And you saw the damage a 63 did to Gressier. Then a 62. Well, that then in a 61, like it just killed them. And so even though he sort of backed it off again, that's what you don't get in a time trial at that really crunch point in a race. And that's what won in the race today. Fantastic.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Can't fool you. And I don't think we'll see another one like that for a few years.
We'd love to see him come back and do it. And it's that sort of attitude. You're like, man, Duke, just replicate that at the Worlds, at the, you know, the Olympics.
But,
you know, really that sort of gung-ho racing. Haven't seen that since Zundernay Tedesi. You know, I thought it was flashbacks to 09 in Berlin. But it paid off for the pace setter. I do think I loved Gressier's, and obviously Lebalu gets second, hard fought second for him.
Mm.
Great for the defending champ, but I loved Gressier's and Kripa's passion. You know, what that bronze medal meant to the both of them. They were both, take the other two out the race, that could have been a gold medal winning sprint from both of them. Like that. And the way they were just sort of cat and mouse playing with each other over those last few laps. And I got to give it to all of these guys. You know, they really prioritize the championships. They try and peak for the championships and they put on a bloody show. And yeah, we are grateful for that.
You certainly are, mate. Does that wrap up the 10K and we can get into that 15?
Yeah, because if the 10K didn't blow our minds, the 15 certainly did.
Yeah, it did, mate. Did we call that? We could not have called that.
No, Crackcram had it summed up perfectly. You know, no one who was involved in our sport could have called that top three.
Yeah, absolutely bonkers. So Nielsen takes the win, Fjällström second, Koskren third, and then three Brits, fourth, fifth, and sixth. And not the way around you'd have them either, right? Like Wyman falters to sixth place. And it was a messy race, wasn't it, for a lot of guys. And I think they all wanted to be in the same place on the track. And so everyone was just battling each other pretty much after the first 400. Between 400 and then to the bell, they were all just battling for position, and it just got so, so messy. And I think a lot of people wasted energy moving in around the pack actually quite early in the race.
Yeah. And maybe it paid by the sort of Koskrens, the Fjällströms and the Nielsens being the kind of guys who were maybe, we always say, don't we, they're going to allow others to make their move before they really make theirs, because they must have believed they could win that tonight and get something from that race. I'm not saying that, but I think they would have been happy to let the big guns move first. And that's exactly what they did. On the positioning, I haven't watched it back enough times yet, only a couple of times. But when you look at Nielsen's positioning, you know, we talk about positions in track and field. Nielsen's positioning with 150 to go. The guy's in sixth. He's just been cut up. He's actually just had to really slow down. His last 100 was insane. And who does he train with? Niels Laus. He's out of the same project, out of the same camp. We didn't have Niels Laus at his championships. We thought I thought that was going to be a massive loss, because after last year, you're like, Niels Laus is going to, you know, he is going to take this over. He's going to be the man at least at a European level. But his training partner pulled off probably the upset of the championship, and in phenomenal fashion, in Laos fashion, with that last 100, and from a poor place at 150 to go, it has to be said. I was stunned. And the same with Fjällström, and the same with Koskren was in the best position out of all of them, but Fjällström comes extremely late as well. And a word on Fjällström. I was commentating on the BMC last weekend, and he won the B race, and he had a massive kick in the B race, but it was for a 146, so it wouldn't have turned many heads. But boy, did he!
Wow.
Did he close well? So yeah, tune up with the BMC folks. That's the lesson there.
Yeah, in the B race as well. So I'm sure he'll be pleased with that one.
Nuts.
Look, let's talk about the Brits and obviously mainly Hayward and Wyman, because I think they were both vying for a gold medal today, and Wyman obviously the clear favourite, I think, in the field. And Wyman found himself in a few tricky spots, didn't he, which is unlike him. I guess similar to the commies a bit. But yeah, he tactically, I think he's certainly seen better days.
Yes, he struggled. He, like you mentioned, he wasted a lot of energy getting out of his bad positions. I mean, both him and Hayward were in okay. Obviously, Hayward was in great position for a lot of this race. Hayward was in second behind Nolas for a long time. And then what happened was, I can't remember, but bunch of guys sweep round. It shunts Hayward back, and it shunted Whiteman back as well. They then both had to make these quite aggressive moves approaching the bell to get themselves. And Hayward obviously swings round into lead, fine. Whiteman follows him. And actually, from that position, I thought they didn't do much wrong.
Yeah, I thought Hayward did the right thing, because I think we saw him at British Champs. He hit the front and then didn't do anything. And that's when Arlo got him, right? Today, actually, I think when he hit the front, he was like, well, you got to go now. Like, he's used his main move to actually get himself on.
But I don't
think
he did. And this is what I mean by Hayward has had a long time out of the game, and he hasn't been able to race. Imagine if he's raced these sorts of championships for the last 3 years. He is going to be so much more equipped in that position. And I think Hayward's problem was he felt the pressure of Whiteman. He knew he didn't want to give up the inside. Whiteman was pushing and pushing and pushing, and he just forced Hayward to run himself out of it as well. He forced Hayward to just go too hard down the back stretch, round the top bend. Whiteman's on him trying to get by. I thought Whiteman either needed to get by at 200 or he needed to make the decision down the back straight really and go, am I going to get past him by the time we hit this bend? If I'm not, I'm on the outside. I've got everyone else covered on the outside of me and behind me. I just need to relax and just really just sit off and wait till that final 100, and we'll get on to Keelan Worry. But I think a similar scenario there. But so they ended up, you know, again, on comms, they have it now. You know, they just pressed each other out of this race. They squeezed the life out of each other. And, it was an easy, well, not an easy victory, but it was easy by that point because they were so exhausted for the others just to attack them.
Yeah. And at one point, it looked like Arlo might come round and pass everyone as well. I actually think he had a great race, didn't he? And he probably didn't put a foot wrong, to be honest.
No.
Like fifth place for him's unbelievable performance, the season he's had. So, yeah, I'd be interested to see what he comes back with next year. Getting himself in some good races now, hopefully, and go chase some times. But yeah, I think the problem with Haywood and Whiteman, and it's a good problem to have, is they're just confident guys, and they want to go and win gold medals. They're not there for bronzes, and so you do always run the risk that you burn out trying to make a gold medal winning move.
For both Jakes, they wanted to win tonight. There was no other medal that they would have been happy with. It was win or nothing. That definitely showed in their tactics and their aggression over that last lap. I don't think anyone quite realized the strength of the others' finishes. When I looked at this field, I was like, okay, yeah, like, you know, yeah, Nielsen can close hard, but he's never going to out.
All the guys who are the big names, they're down the pack, like you say. Wyman's sixth, Nordahl's seventh, Harkin's ninth, Habs is 10th, Nader is 12th.
Yeah, yeah, Nader gave up though. He's a funny guy, is Nader. I think he realizes it's not on, and he checks out. He really did jog it in. He wasn't about it at all.
Yeah. So, hey, hats off to Nielsen though. Not taking anything away from him, but yeah, disappointing run for the Brits. I'm sure. So yeah, they're messing up our predictions as well.
Right. Yeah. Disappointing for them, but for us, you know, we take our hat off to them because they, you know, it was pretty special what, you know, to have them all competing for, well, to have two of them going for gold, like in the way they were and to be at the level they're at. But yeah, and this is why we just love championship racing. And you compare that to a Diamond League. I mean, these guys don't even get in the same race in most Diamond Leagues.
Yeah.
And not even able to get in the same lineup. I mean, Filstrom and Nielsen do get in the odd Diamond League, but if it's stacked, they can't get near it. But boy, will they now. And we got to mention Andrew Koskinen as well. Like that was incredible from him. Grand Slam winner last year. He teased us all with his tactics. He teased us all with that kick finish. He's been there before. And it came out again here. So, and that's a big win for New Balance Manchester as well. So big result for them.
Yeah. That's all for today. But yesterday, obviously at the Women's 800, the one that we were billing the race of the championship, we predicted Femke Bol might take out hard. She didn't. And I think for that reason, she never really put herself in with a shot of winning it. Audrey Vera, though, clearly not hurt by the fall, and yeah, absolutely dominated that race.
Yeah, I do think Vera looked she looked tired for me. I don't think the conditions were great last night at all, and there was a scenario where I think all of them were just quite tense. And I don't know if we spoke about this the other night as well, but I think all of them knew the pressure on this race and could they race quite as freely. But yeah, and actually I was sitting there, it was roasting yesterday, obviously, but I was like sweating watching it because, you know, something's going to happen. And then actually for 500 meters of that race, nothing happened. There was no change in any of the positions. Of course, Keeley was trying to attack, but wasn't getting anywhere. And Vera just had the advantage of controlling it. And we kind of said, whoever leads that race, whoever is at the front of 400, probably will go on to win. And just because you can just control that whole last lap. And you know, when you're out front in an 800 like that, you know how much you've got left. And you're running so fast, it's incredibly difficult for someone to pass you unless you're really blowing up. Yeah, she just, the gap she had on Keeley at the bell was the gap she had on Keeley at the end. And it's the same with Femke in third. The gap Femke gave them at 200 was the gap she lost by. And I think Femke needs to just...
She needs to become a front runner.
She needs to get, she needs to toughen up and just go, I'm going to dictate races. Because if she was on the shoulder of Vera, I think we might have had a different race. And if she was
on the shoulder, I think she needs to lead them out.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, because I just don't think Yeah, I think she's better leading them out and just being, just racing it like a sprint, you know. And just...
but it, yeah, this is what we were saying when in early sort of midsummer with all of these girls now is they need to find a way. This championship, they're all at their best.
Mm.
We get excited about next year, but we hope they're all at their best next year at the World Championships. But it's our sport, and injuries happen, and
well,
it's
look
so
what's happened
difficult.
To Athemo, and
yeah,
you know, like there's no guarantees.
But what I'm saying is, if they're all at their best again, someone needs to find a way to, because I think they're all front runners, and they'd all love to control that first lap. They'd love to control the last lap. But someone needs to find a way to win, which isn't that. Because how can you control what two other people are going to be doing?
Yeah, because if you all have the same tactics, it's just going to go to form book, basically. And then we don't need the race.
And whatever, you know, and that sort of positioning over that opening 200, which is...
Yeah. But what I mean is, when you're all in your best shape, the only person that can dictate the race is the one who's the fittest in the first
place. Probably, yeah. Yeah, I would agree. So, yeah.
But... yeah, I mean, Vera, I think still, like, as much as she went in as a favourite, still a breakout season, and that is a first championship win for her.
It's a massive win.
So, yeah, huge. Tough for Keely. I don't know what else she could have done, really, like, because she told me she's not in shape to go and run 154 flat from the front. And I think that was the only way she's going to win that.
Yeah. I think the only way is if it was roles reversed and she was able to get the front like we're and control that. But I imagine Keely and Jenny and Trev will study that one, and I do think that yesterday that's probably all she had. You know, I don't think conditions are great. It was obviously quite a quick turnaround, reasonable quick turnaround after, you know, major championships. They tend to have a day before the final, so it was quite a quick turnaround into the
weird
final.
Decision to do that when they gave him a day after the heat. I think they'd much rather go heat semi.
For me, for us as fans, I think it was way better. Look, whatever the athletes
want. It
was
excitement, doesn't it?
Yeah, because you're just like, bang, I've just watched the semi final and then the finals that next night. And for me, that is how it should be. Like, because you've got the storyline, it's all bubbling away. You have the drama of the semis, maybe a big name misses out, obviously the forward were, whatever it is. And then it's like, okay, let's see what they can all do in that final. And you're there. That's when you want it. When you have a day, it's like, you're waiting around for it. So
that's why, like, the 100, like, back in the Bolt era, when you're like, you get to watch him like an hour before in the semi.
Oh, they still do that in the 100.
Oh, no, but no one cares anymore, right? Like, yeah. That's what I mean.
Oh God! Try and say that to Amy Hunt and Romel Glaive. But
yeah. I watched the full 100. The men did
but
well.
But do you? Yeah, I want to get back to Kitty's race because there is a part where I think she just was just too close to Wero and letting Wero know she was there, and that allowed Wero to respond at all times. Like we saw it on the home straight when Keely sort of went on round the bend, when Keely pressed, Wero was able to sort of respond very quickly. When she then presses again on the home straight, also Wero is able to respond. And she lost she needed to be a couple of yards back and really try and surprise Wero, like not let Wero know she was coming. Cause this is what we said about, completely different event, but when you think about Rose Davies and Jess Hull at the Commie Games, when Jess Hull is just constantly right there pressing, Rose is like, well, I know you're going to kick now, like I could feel you on me,
she's really, too hard in the 800, right?
Like, it's if you're really breaking it down,
because otherwise we're sat here saying, well, she's giving her too much ground and you're never going to close that over 100 meters against a 153 runner. So
that is the other argument, isn't it?
I don't think she could have done much different other than basically have a better, better season in a way. Like, well, I think the only way she wins this is if she comes in and she's got that kind of Keely factor about her, and you can't like manufacture that. Like, you have to just be having an amazing year so that everyone's fearing you. And then lets you go to the front and lets you dictate because they're scared, you know.
Well, she was at the front. You know, let's be real. She was leading after the first 200 and Wero came round her. So she did let Wero go round her at some point. And I wonder again, when we tend to fixate on the last 300 of this race and say like, yeah, that might, we didn't put foot wrong, but I wonder if they will analyze it more. I mean, she was, you know, giving her a breakdown of the race
enough to stop her going past. Yeah. At that point.
But she gave a great breakdown of the race on during the evening session tonight, didn't she, on the TV? And yeah, she knows where she's at. And by God, we're lucky to be watching this era of women's 800 meter running.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And Femke Bol as well. Like, she's only going to get better. But I just want to see her grab it. I want to see her absolutely run some stupid first lap. But we shall see. Women's 10K. Bascoletti comes back from the 5. Never in doubt, really. Like, she got a ridiculous finish. Megan Keith struggled, didn't she? I think, like, hit a front and tried to make a go of it, but it's just didn't have the quality to really hurt those women.
I actually feel like she does have the quality but she's
on the night she didn't.
And she's just got a lot of running in her legs, man. The emotions from Commies, you know, no one else in that field had had the 2 weeks that she had going into that race. And in the 10,000, there is no hiding. I mean, Almgren showed that. Look, I know Bascoletti doubled in a 5, so did Costa. They are class acts. But yeah, you've got to give Megan credit. And I know she faded further back as well. She didn't just come fourth. She faded a bit beyond. Where'd she come in the end, man?
8.
But yeah, we love the way she runs. And I think doing that in front of a home crowd, she can walk off the track proud and very happy of the way she executed that race, and definitely puts on a show for us. And to be honest, if she'd have let it be slow, there's a high chance she would have come 8th. So
100%. That's it. And that's her strength, right? And so can't really fault it. Tough night for Izzy Fry. Took a little fall, didn't she? Quite near the start, and then so difficult after that.
I just think as well that you see the impact of what a lot of people don't appreciate in the 10,000, and it's a distance that, look, unfortunately, nobody runs a 10,000 anymore on the track unless it's a time trial scenario and it's bang even laps. So you don't get to experience these, and Megan Keith is better than anyone at it. And you saw what Almgren did today. You don't get to experience this, you know, to go from in that mentality, to go from a 78 or whatever they just ran to a 65. Like, I know 65 is most of these, it's quite comfortable for a lot of men, but that is just sprinting. And it's the same in the women's, you know, you go from running 80s down to 71s. It's just a massive jump. And, completely different mechanics. It's a shock to the system, and I don't know how many, you know, no one will train in that fashion, and it's so hard to sort of quantify how much that takes out of the legs. And I think obviously Izzy Fry is definitely building that experience. She's been, you know, this isn't her first championship anymore, but for me, the way Megan Keith was able to, she's now not fearing trying to run the legs out of Costa and Bascoletti, all these other people behind her, which I think that's the first step. And then, you know, you can start to give it another 2 years in 2028, and that tactic probably works.
I do like Izzy Fry's commitment to the 10K. It's I think it's quite clear that she's trying to specialize in that event.
Yes and no. I think what it shows is, I mean, Clara Lucan was in there, European record over 10K on the roads, and she was way down. And for me, watching these track 10Ks, you see the difference. There's a massive difference to the... And sometimes you forget, you know, in the winter when it's all the hype and everyone's running fast over 10K on the roads, you see the difference in just the lap splits, the changes in pace, the bodies around you, the emotional stress. Oh, it's just... It's a completely different experience on the track. And in this day and age, it is without a doubt much, much, much harder.
Yeah. It is. It's probably the women's 10. Apart from that, only other thing we had, obviously Georgia Bell safely through to the 1500 meter final. She looks supreme. Didn't put a foot wrong. So we'll see how she goes tomorrow. Nothing much to report on that one. And that's our last day tomorrow, really. Got a marathons, men's steeplechase, and a women's 1500 meters. And then we are done and dusted for the summer, really, apart from some Diamond Leagues. World Ultimates.
Well, comes quick, man. We got the two team BMC to look forward to. That's next Wednesday. And I know there's a lot of big names, heading to Tooting on that day. But and then the Diamond League is in Lausanne, I think, on the 21st. But yeah, look, Georgia Bell for me probably comfortably wins tomorrow in the 1500.
Yeah, now that would be an upset. you mentioned the upset in the men's 15, but yeah. Georgia Bell doesn't win tomorrow, that would be a shock.
It would be a shock. And the men's steeple, by the way, update. My brother will be contesting the final because one of the French lads, unfortunately, injured. So will not start the final. And apparently they want a full field. So they just give the spot to the next fastest on paper, which happened to be Zach. So, he gets...
Hey, what do we think about these discretionary spots? Yeah. Not on, is it? he's back on to debate whether Zach should be in that race.
Well, we saw... I don't know how many people would have seen the women's 400, but... Henrik in the women's 400, it happened to her. Anne Browning pulled out, and Henrik's actually warmed up, and she actually went to the warm-up track and sort of prepared, not even knowing she was going to get a call up, gets the call up probably an hour before the race or whatever it was, or half an hour before the race after Anne Browning drops out. So that was very last minute. My brother has had a couple of days, 24 hours to sort of process it. But he will line up, so we'll have three Brits in the steeplechase finals. So there you go. That is definitely a new rule. That is definitely a new rule. Because for the men's eight, when Max Bergen pulled out and warm up, the ninth person definitely wasn't warming up because they had no one to call upon in that situation. So yeah, that is the first time I've ever seen it. And
you're now forcing athletes to maybe consider doing it, aren't you? Consider like going to the track and
Well, that's actually what the organizers say is like, if you're the ninth person, we want, and that's what happened today with Henrik in 400. If you're the ninth person, we want you to go to the warm up track, you know, as if you're racing. We want you to warm up as if you're racing, because I think what they obviously don't like as an organizer is empty lanes in finals. For whatever reason, you can understand that actually.
You can, but imagine that person goes on and wins.
It's all part of the story, mate. No, I know.
If Zach wins tomorrow.
Yeah.
You got some people looking and they're like, well, he was allowed to jog his heat. I know he wasn't, but do you know what I mean? You can start in team tactics. So Jakob now can be one side out because he knows Philip's going to pull out the final anyway. So
I guess you could have people taking the piss. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know how much you could. You're probably changing.
Probably not running down anywhere though. So they can.
But I think in the distance races that sort of thing is much harder. But you are right in the sort of shorter distance races. It's maybe bigger margins.
Yeah. Funny one. But anyway, it's good news. Good news is Zach's in there anyway.
The drama of the so we have had a lot of drama in this European Championships. But anyway, I think that's about it. We've got the marathons obviously tomorrow morning. That will actually be a great watch, and just even being on the streets of Birmingham, I think it would be fantastic because it's a 5K loop and the women start at 7:30, the men at 8:00 or something like that. 10:08 is it 40 minutes after. So it's just like they're all going to be out there on the same time. So if you're watching that, actually in Birmingham, is I don't think you could ask for much more. You're going to have constant runners out on the course, and I think that is fair play to the organisers.
Could have some carnage though.
I mean, you could have some carnage, I must say. Drink stations, I can see it now. Drink station.
Stealing drinks.
Dear mate. So they might regret that decision, but actually for people up on those barriers in Birmingham Town Centre tomorrow, I think are gonna really enjoy themselves early on a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And it's cooling down a bit for them, thankfully. Look, mate, I just want to preview this 2-2 BMC because after the Euros does wrap up, everyone will be turning their attention to this. At the moment, leading entries in the 800, Sean Dolan, 145 man, did go to World Indoors, by the way, for the USA. Dave Race is in there. Justin Davies in there. Callum Dodds, John Rivera, 144 man, Puerto Rico. OG Ole Miss boy. Do you remember him? Archie Davies, Tom Keane in the eight. Women's eight, Adele Tracy, Abby Ives, Lucy Armitage chasing that sub two, Carly Thomas, Grace Van Zagu. Men's 15, definitely the strongest field. I mean, it always seems to be, very, very hotly contested, that men's 15. So John Renwicki, I think he's Adam Fogg's training partner, isn't he? The Under Armour boy, 333 man. Fogg's in there, James McMurray's in there, Callum Elson's in there, Henry Jonas, Valentina Soccer. Remember him, sub 13 at the Worlds last year. Or was it in Budapest? Can't remember, but he's, 335 man as well. Wave light set for 333. Nate Mountain, 811 steeple, won the former NCAA champ. I think he was second or one of the year champs in the steeple. He's going to be pacing both the A and the B race, dependent if he gets in the Celestia Diamond League, apparently. So, yeah. Basically, A race cutoff is 337, B race is 337, and the C race is 339. Goodness me. Women's 15, Kate Axford, Melissa Scotty Bryant, Holly Dixon, Lindsay Butler, Carrie Hughes is in there, India Weir's in there, men's 3K, George Cooty. He definitely is the runaway favourite for that one if he is in shape. Toby Golan, 13-10 man, Jack Kavanagh, Aduna Kabede, 336 man at St. Mary's, and then women's 3K at the moment. Leading entries, Maddie Skyring of Australia, 14.495K. So I imagine the fields are, I haven't got obviously the BMC start list on out yet, but that's just the leading names. And I imagine they're very, very deep. So all to look forward to for the Tutor BMC, which is going to be live on Vinca as it usually is. And maybe even YouTube that one. Can't remember.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, and we'll be back on
Monday. We'll be back on Monday to review tomorrow's session, wrap up the Europeans. What an evening of athletics tonight. And we'll also look ahead to that Diamond League on Friday. And of course, the Celestia Diamond League is on Sunday. So we still have a very, very big weekend or week of athletics. And actually, it's big Diamond League every week now with the headliners. And then we just build towards the World Ultimate Championships and then the World Road Running Championships back to back. So from Euros to a month's time, there is a major race every single weekend. So it's a fun time to be a track and field fan.
Yeah. And then we're Peruvian in Liverpool, mate. So
shit, we are. Yeah. Too right. Too right. I mean, we'll also be wrapping up podium tomorrow because Neil Gurley's just announced he's going to run the mile. That's his bid to go to World Road Running Champs. James West is in the 5K, as I mentioned earlier. And women's field also, you've got people like Carrie Hughes in there, Amina Urquhart. It's going to be a good one.
Right. Thanks for listening to us. We'll catch you guys on Monday.